Hey there, welcome to the Creative Classroom Podcast, where we look at the intersection of creativity and student learning. I'm a former middle school teacher, current college professor. I have one of the funnest, I guess funnest is not technically a word, but one of the coolest jobs around. I get to work with pre-service teachers and watch them grow into teacher professionals and innovators, and it's a blast. So anyway, on this particular podcast, I want to explore something that I think is vital to creativity, and that is rest. It's something that often gets neglected. It's something that is not talked about very often. And I think too often when we think about rest, we view rest as a break from real productivity, or we see it as a luxury item, but it's not. And this is heavily influenced by a great book that I read recently. I tore through it. I think I read it in 2 days, called, oddly enough, Rest. And I'm going to mess up the name badly. But anyway, you can find the link. The name of the book is Rest, When You Get Why You Get More Done When You Work Less. So anyway, highly recommend that book. Go check it out. It has really influenced my thinking on this subject, along with a few other books. Tools of Titans, which is the Tim Ferriss, his latest book. And then also Flow, which is from the whole philosophy of flow theory. So anyway, I'm going to go ahead and launch into it. Let's have some fun with this topic. At first, I thought it was a teacher thing. I would ask how someone was doing, and they would say, I'm really busy. This was often followed by a description of how little sleep they had gotten and how much grading they had done, and these teachers weren't whining. It wasn't a poor me attitude. It was almost like a sense of pride. As teachers, we often wear busy as a badge of honor, advertising to the world how out of control our careers have become. Later, I realized that this wasn't limited to just the teaching profession. When I went to a family activity, a party, and asked people how they were doing, the first answer was nearly always, "Oh, we've been really busy, really, really busy lately." This is usually followed by a description of various scheduled activities. Baseball season is so time-consuming. Football is so time-consuming. Homework is so time-consuming. Everything is so time-consuming. But the thing is, I say the same thing all the time. I'm guilty of this as well. I drop the busy bomb into a conversation, almost as evidence that my life is full. But here's the odd thing. Busy isn't something to strive for. It isn't something to be proud of. It's actually not very good at all. When I look back at my life, I don't want to say I was really good at being busy. Now, I don't think it's wrong to be productive. I don't think it's a bad thing when teachers go far beyond their 40 hours of teaching. After all, I know of a science teacher, Michael Doyle, who spends hours each week leaving meaningful feedback on student work, setting up cool labs for his students, tending to a garden. But I'd argue that he's not busy, because busy is different. Busy is hurried. Busy is overwhelmed. Busy is fast. Busy is packed so hard that you can hardly breathe. That's busy. And this is why a few years ago I broke up with busy. It was a moment where I had gone outside, and my son was really small at the time. He's now like 11. I want to say he was maybe 3 or 4 years old. We had a newborn. My middle son was a newborn at the time. And I remember playing catch with him. And for the first 5 minutes of playing catch, I was distracted. All I could do was think about everything I needed to get done. And it hit me at the end that I needed to break up with busy, that I had missed the first half of playing catch. And I didn't want to live like that anymore. I was missing the things that mattered most in my life. And honestly, that was family. And so I changed my schedule. I quit committees. I dropped back how many hours a week I work. And I would say the last 5 years of teaching, I worked at or under 40 hours a week. Now, I would do some work in the summer, and that was part of how I was able to accomplish that. But that was the schedule I carved out. And I found something interesting. At the time, I thought I would have to sacrifice productivity in order to cultivate rest. But that's not what happened. What happened was the opposite. I've been more productive and more creative in the last 5 years. 6 years, maybe seven. I don't know how long it's been. 6 years since breaking up with Busy. And that's the idea here. Rest is vital for creative work. Lately, I've been thinking a lot about the value of rest. That could be that I work with a cohort of teachers who are super busy. They're in student teaching, they're taking the EdTPA, they're doing all of this work, and they are exhausted. But I think I'm also rethinking the whole purpose of rest. I used to see rest as a luxury that you could attain if you were really efficient with your work. I saw it as a bonus, as the icing on a cake, which by the way, a cake without icing is just, you know, a muffin. But now I see rest as a vital part of the creative experience, as a discipline you have to cultivate if you want to be more creative and more productive. I noticed this first when reading Tools of Titans, which I mentioned before, that the highest performers in just about every industry were often unhurried and unrushed. They were the ones who took naps, went on walks, exercised, engaged in creative hobbies, or deep play is the term used in the book Rest, in their spare time. And I noticed a similar trend when reading that book Rest, why you get more done when you work less. Some of the most innovative people around were the ones who rested. Charles Darwin and Charles Dickens both went on long walks. Some of the greatest innovators and engineers in our world take regular naps. And neuroscientists continue to confirm this same central idea. At one time, we believed that rest was a time when the mind did nothing. But now we realize that the mind is actually incredibly active during rest. And that if you want to be more creative and productive, you need to cultivate these spaces of rest on a regular basis. So here are seven ways to incorporate rest into your life. Number one, work fewer hours. Now, this is an interesting phenomenon. There was a research thing done in the 1950s. And they looked at people who were scientists and professors, and they found that those who worked 10 to 20 hours a week were highly productive. And that, you know, at the point of about 4 hours a day of intense work, you hit a peak. And the assumption was that if people worked 30 or 35 or 40 hours, they would do more. They would produce more scholarly articles. But that's actually not what happened. The professors who worked 35 to 40 hours per week were half as productive as those who worked 20 hours. And this is a common trend throughout just about every industry. Musicians and athletes who practiced more than 4 hours per day were actually less productive than the ones who only worked 4 hours a day. And some of the best artists, engineers, and writers tend to stick to this four-hour workday. And often what you see, and this will get into the next point, is that they break it up. They work 2 hours of intense work where they hit a state of flow, and then they break it off. They go for a walk, they take a nap, they exercise, and then they come back and they do their next two-hour segment. Now, I realize that this isn't always possible. In fact, it's nearly impossible for teachers. But it does suggest that there is a downside to always being on at all times. We actually need spaces of mental slack where we can zone out and daydream. I remember talking to my friend William Chamberlain. He's an amazing teacher. And he said that he gets tired of teachers getting the advice that they should never be at their desk or that they should always be present with their students. He said those moments of mental breaks make him a better teacher. Those little moments of spacing out for a second are often where the best ideas come from when it comes to lessons. And I think we need to rethink what it means to be present as a teacher and what it means to orient our days. We can't always be on. That's exhausting, and I'm not even sure that that's what students need. If they're all engaged, for example, in an amazing project, then yes, you could pull some aside for one-on-one conferencing, you could meet with small groups. But I also think you could give yourself the permission to take a break while you teach. I mean, still be present, still be there, still pay attention, but not be on, if that makes sense. Number two is take naps. In the midst of the most harrowing days of World War II, Winston Churchill would take long baths and then take a nap. And what's interesting is just how common this is with high-profile leaders. Some of the best presidents took naps on a regular basis. Some of the best problem solvers do the same thing. And it is vital for creativity. But it turns out that a nap isn't downtime at all. It's actually a period where your brain is able to process and reflect and plan. There's some fascinating research on the power of naps, ranging from increasing alertness to making better moral decisions to reducing cognitive load to processing complex information. And, you know, one of the things that I found fascinating is just how many domains that this falls into. We need this space of downtime. Emotionally, we need it. Psychologically, we need it. Physically, we need it. Cognitively, we need it. And naps actually provide a really valuable service for doing that. It's why they're starting to implement more and more programs where pilots in the Air Force are given naps. And what they find is that these naps actually make them better pilots. Number three, go for a walk. Now, I found this to be true all the time, but, you know, I used to go for a walk when I was stuck as a teacher during my prep. I would plan something, I'd walk away, go for a walk, come back, and I'd find that it works. I use walks all the time when I feel stuck at my job, when I'm trying to solve something. But, you know, regular walks, scheduled walks, planned walks, can do the same thing for you. Lin-Manuel Miranda, who wrote Hamilton and is one of my favorite writers, essentially crafted the entire thing when he was taking his dog for a walk each day. This period of going for a walk was a huge part of what made him productive. Researchers have actually tested this with treadmills. It's really interesting. Graduate students who take a break from puzzles and then walked on treadmills performed higher on divergent and problem-solving tests than those who continued to work on the same puzzles. And so I think it's important that we consider this, that we decide we're going to take walks. I remember years ago, Michael Doyle, he's a science teacher I highly respect, would post about taking long walks by the beach and finding clams and just thinking about life. And I thought at the time that this was a crazy luxury that he could afford. A nice idea, but impossible for a busy teacher like me. But as I started incorporating long walks into my days, I found that I was able to reach a level of clarity that doesn't happen when you're tapping away at a computer. Mentally, it feels like, I don't know, getting out of a traffic jam and taking things off road. And that's what walks do. Like, yes, you're physically moving away, but in the meantime, you're also mentally moving away in a really profound way. Number four, ditch the perfectionism. I often feel guilty about working fewer hours than some of my colleagues. I have moments where I ponder if I'm going to get, quote, found out as someone who works no more than 40 hours per week. But I'm beginning to discover that there are things that require 100% and things that require like 10%. it's okay to pick and choose where you will do your best work. A few days ago, I led a book discussion on this topic of rest. And when I asked fellow faculty members what types of barriers get in the way of rest, I kept hearing things like fear of letting people down, or fear of missing out, or the drive to make sure that things are perfect. In other words, it was fear and perfectionism over and over and over again. But if we want to be more creative and more productive as a result, we need to decipher between the urgent and the important, and we need to figure out when something is just good enough, and we need to be okay with that. Number five, stop working when it's working. I know this sounds funny, but stop working when it's working. I remember hearing about this strategy when I read about a biography on Hemingway. And the idea is simple. You finish your work halfway and then come back to it later. In other words, an author will stop mid-sentence or mid-paragraph. That was the case of Hemingway. And then later he would come back to it and he would know exactly where to start. And this is because the hardest part of creative work involves getting started. We often move to Facebook or Twitter when we should get started on our work, and that's because we aren't sure where to start. But there's another benefit to this strategy. When we stop in the middle of deep work, we can spend time resting and reworking these little bits and pieces while we are engaged in play or in long walks or in exercise. How many times have you left something in the middle and then you've driven off to run an errand and then some kind of solution pops into your head? That's not on accident. That is how we are hardwired. Number six, embrace boredom. Think back to your most ingenious idea you had in the last year. Chances are it happened at a boring moment. You were taking a shower or stuck in traffic or waiting in line somewhere. And these moments of boredom can be, well, frankly, annoying. But there's a part of this restful state of boredom that actually increases your divergent thinking. A while back, I don't know, a little over a year ago, I wrote about why boredom can make you more creative. You can check it out on this blog post that goes with this podcast. And it feels counterintuitive because boredom sucks. As teachers, we work hard to make sure our lessons aren't boring. We live in a culture with instant information and constant entertainment and gratification at our fingertips. But boredom can actually be a gift. It can be the very thing you need in order to have a creative breakthrough. Number seven, make deep play a priority. Play isn't just a valuable thing for kids. It's actually something that can make us more creative. Alex Soojung Kim Pan, the writer of that book Rest that I keep referencing, shares four characteristics of deep play. Number one, it's mentally absorbing. Number two, it offers a new context where you can use the same skills as your work. Number three, it offers clearer rewards and more user agency than traditional work. In other words, you see your rewards more clearly and you experience more of a sense of control. And number four, it provides a connection to your past. Now, this is why I write novels, sketch pictures, and just recently started designing baseball stadiums in Minecraft, not to mention, well, Quidditch stadiums too. True, these are activities I can do with my kids, but they're also low pressure and high reward spaces where I can play around with creative ideas. And I'd argue that they have surprising benefits. Writing a novel has helped me think of the relationship between lesson planning and storycraft. Playing Minecraft has helped me see iterative thinking in action, and seeing it made visible is incredibly powerful. Playing chess has made me a better systems thinker, and it turns out that mediocre doodling that I do when I'm bored has become a surprising skill for making sketch videos and making presentations. People sometimes ask where I, quote, learned how to draw, and the short answer is I still haven't. I'm not a legit artist, but this playing around time has made it so I can incorporate it into what I do now. But all of it started with play. Now, this may seem unrealistic for teachers, but I think there's a few things that you can do to incorporate rest into your schedule. I'll just tick a few of these off. You can get up early. Try getting up at 5 a.m. and spending 2 hours working on some creative work. You can also walk more. I used to spend half of my prep period walking, and it was incredibly valuable. Prioritize your work. Figure out how to cut corners, how to make templates, how to spend your time wisely, how to make the most out of a 10 or 15 minute segment. Find a creative outlet outside of teaching, and that can go with the whole getting up early thing. Treat summers like sabbaticals. Get over people pleasing. Teachers are the worst at people pleasing. And understand that the quality of your work doesn't depend on being the first one there and the last one to leave. And then the last one is be intentional. Use your time with intent. Don't just space out in a way where you are idle, but use your spare time to do things that actually matter to you. And so I think it's important that teachers get rest. There's no magical formula that will give you more hours in a day. There are no hacks that will make you hyper efficient. But it's possible to rethink your schedule and your mindset to make rest more of a priority. And when this happens, you'll actually be more productive and more creative. Thanks for listening to this podcast. If you enjoy this at all, please leave a review on iTunes. That would mean the world to me. And send me a line. Let me know what you're thinking, if there's something I can improve on this or something you enjoy about it. And have a wonderful day. Get some rest.